Hello and welcome to the UCBT New York podcast for this week, the date of which I do not know.
It's whatever it is. Look
whatever
on your calendar.
Look up to your
look on your Zen meditations per day.
I'm here with John Frusciante.
And I am here with Will Hines.
And we are here to bring another edition of our podcast. Well, once again, we've let the interview go a teensy bit long.
Yeah.
So we're going to forego our beginning part where we talk about shows.
It's a great interview.
I am
really excited about this interview. It's with James Eason and Jessica Allen.
Jess Eason officially, but we all know her as just Allen because she has been improvising here for a long time under that name before they got married.
Right.
So James from Mother, Jessica's from Neutrino. We talk about their current sketch show and some of their improv history. We have a lot of great stories.
Yeah, lots of great stuff. You guys are going to love this one.
We're going to stop talking. You'll hear a song, and then this other interview will play.
That reminds you, I have to get you a new song.
Oh, yeah, we got to get new music. We don't know if this one will be different or not.
Right.
Or may not, depending on how lazy I am. Anyway,
but here it is.
And enjoy it.
Okay, and we're back with the UCB Theater Podcast, and sitting with us today are James Eason and Jessica Allen. Jessica Allen Eason.
Yeah.
Stage name Jessica Allen. That's the professional working actor name.
Right, but we know you as Jessica Allen.
Yeah. her official SAG name is Jessica Eason, but
Elena Eason.
Everyone will continue to call her Jess Allen.
In the improv world.
Improv world's Jess Allen,
So your show is D-Bags, A-Holes, and
Lovers.
And Lovers. D-Bags, A-Holes, and Lovers. Yeah.
D-Bags, A-Holes, and Lovers.
Yeah.
And it's a sketch show that the two of you wrote and performed together, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's a show that's a series of scenes that in one way or another, not by prior intent, but sort of showcases A-Holes and D-Bags, and we're the Lovers.
Oh, adorable.
Wait a minute, but aren't you therefore also the D-Bags and whatever?
Well, yes, if I remember correctly from the prior podcast a few weeks ago,
that's right.
You assumed I was the D-Bag.
Yes, I heard that you were in a show where D-Bag was in the title. I was like, Eason's clearly the douchebag.
Yeah. I feel that's probably fair, although I'm in fear that I'm always the A-hole.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a tough philosophical debate.
Yeah, it's such a fine line between
which one
the two.
Is better to be, the D-bag or the A-hole?
And one man's D-bag is another man's A-hole.
And if an A-hole falls in a forest, does it make a D-bag?
Yeah.
Probably.
Is anybody offended?
Right. So you two are married. You've been married for quite
like
a time.
A year and a half.
15
a year.
Years. How long we haven't done our research?
25 years.
Yeah, 35 no years. Whatsoever. Yeah, we got married when we were 9, and now we are,
So what's the process like for creating a show for the two of you? What went into? Because there's a lot of, you know, couples who do improv and do sketch together, and a lot of people who are not couples but do improv together because they want to be couples, but they're too shy and awkward.
Like you two?
Like me and John. That's exactly right.
That's right. I only do this podcast with Will because I want to fuck him.
Yeah. John's engaged, but I'm thinking that the comedic bond over podcasts will someday supplant
him. As some advice that I got when I was in college and was pining for a girl who had a boyfriend, a friend of mine said, it only takes 20 minutes to break up.
Oh, man. A happy person, I assume. I got at a bar at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, some jovial soul with a glow about that. So what was the process for creating the show like for you two?
Well, I will say, I will let Jess talk. I feel like I've been talking already way too much. There are a few things in this world I think I hate more than writing. Really, like, it's so just torturous. And I think that's why I love improv so much, because it's like, go in and do it. And then when you're done, you're done.
Right, right.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Great, you're
lazy
done.
Man's profession.
Exactly. I actually had a conversation with Matt Walsh about that while we were waiting for an audition. He was reading Practical Aesthetics because he was taking classes at the Atlantic because Ian had taken a class there, so everybody got inspired. Right. And he was like, this is hard. And I was like, that's why we do improv.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. So back on track. I will say that Jess is a prolific writer. She sits down to write, and she just writes. She is able to turn off that inner critic that makes me reevaluate every comma and article and on and on and on. And she just writes, and then she's like, she essentially said, we're writing a sketch show. We need to do this.
Yes, I told him that.
And she started banging out these sketches and then was like, take a look at this. And so then I would then go through and sort of make my adjustments, you know, give
you
it a second
pass. You harness them, because I write crazy. So let's be honest. It's a lot of craziness. So, I am the crazy side of it. I went to acting school, so I think I have more of the discipline of, like, let's write. Okay, I will write. And I think the good thing is, to go back to improv and sketch being sort of cousins, I find, like, in my improv, over these many years, I have got much better at being able to see game and play game. In the beginning, being such an actor, I just came from feeling and emotion. So when I write, being not that far along in the writing process of, like, years of writing, I do the same thing. I think I write very emotionally, and I'm just like, relationship, write. And then James comes in, who is very good at the other side, pattern, game. He'll come in and he'll be like, okay, this all fits. What is this? Cut that. He can harness it, whereas I think I just get sort of...
And in preparing for the first spank for the show, we had the sketches that we were going to do. And was it the night before? Jess sort of essentially tore up an entire sketch we had and completely rewrote it and was like, take a look at this. And I read it, and it's that moment of just like, okay, so how do I approach this conversation of, no, we're going to stick with we're not going to do this thing that just sprang forth from your forehead. Like, it's okay. We're going to do this.
So what is that for you? Is that a moment of panic of like, no, this just doesn't work and I need to like fix this immediately?
Yes. It's a weird thing of, I find I'm a good editor of other people's work, but when it's my work and I go back to edit it, I end up rewriting it. I end up rewriting a whole new show. I did that with my second one-person show. The night before I had to do my like first put it up, James is like, it sounds kind of like your first show. So I just rewrote a whole new show.
Yeah.
Not the best. It's good and bad, but you need someone that will sit with you and say, take it down a notch. You don't need, right?
Like,
right.
And in that case that she's talking about, that was amazing because it was.
That worked out fine. But
it worked out great because the first show that she did was about when Jess got robbed.
It was at the UCB stages.
In a
years
yoga
ago.
Studio, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the second show had a lot of the same tone or attitude or sort of character takes on it. And I just said, it seems a lot like that. And we've already, you've already done that. And she literally rewrites the whole show the night before, does it like with the script in hand, but it was completely different. And it was just amazing. Like I couldn't have written the first derivative one as quickly as she did, let alone rewrite an entire new one. Uh-huh. I think that's the bonus is that Jess is just sort of this Mustang running wild in the fields of literature.
Mustang running wild. Unbridled.
Yeah, completely. Right. And then I come in like some sort of combination of Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe, and I tame them.
What? The Misfits?
Wait. The Misfits?
I was thinking more they shoot horses, don't they? You come in and shoot me.
Oh, no. Good Lord.
Turn you into sketch comedy glue.
That's right.
You guys remember when James and Jessica broke up on John and Will's podcast? Metaphors got so crazy.
They no longer together. What a watersed moment for the UCB podcast. So it sounds like you two are kind of the perfect kind of yin and yang together of written creativity, of sketch creativity, with you being the, like, sit down and just write it all out without thinking about it, and you having this overwhelming kind of need to like kind of correct things.
To
like,
analyze and be methodical.
The thing that makes you
but it works. You need it.
Right. Exactly.
Because without it, it just becomes sort of, it becomes a one-person show, but two people aren't in it, which is, they're two different things. I mean, I find that's what made me nervous about the sketch, because when you do a sketch show, people show up and they're like, you better be funny, because this, it's sort of like that thing of it has to be funny. Where a one-person show, you get a lot more leeway. People show up, they want to like you, they root for you, and they wait for the funny to happen, and it can happen through a character. It doesn't have to be joke, but I feel like in sketches, they want to know, why am I here? What's the premise?
It has less of that relying on the personality of the performer. Is that what you're saying? Like the one
that can definitely
show.
Lift the material. I mean, the performance always can lift the material, but I think they're showing up. It's a little closer, not obviously not as close to stand up, but it's that thing of the audience comes to be like, well, you think this is funny, so let's see it. Whereas, improv, half of it, the enjoyment is the audience with you creating it. So they let you find it.
The audience knows that you're making it up.
Yeah.
So they're enjoying the danger of
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, you prepared this? All right. Where's the payoff?
Where's the payoff? Exactly.
And in improv, they oftentimes that laugh comes from the mutual discovery in the scene of like, oh, we've been like, sweeping this whole time, or whatever the awesome thing is.
Like, oh, he's realizing at the same moment that I am the
audience. But in a sketch, if you if you ever have had anybody try to transcribe an improv scene, like word for word,
like 50% enjoy at least.
And Armando Diaz, I remember him once saying, you know, if you've got a great improv scene and you think that it could be a sketch, there's probably about 1% that is going to be the thing that drives that sketch. Yeah. You have to distill it down to that and then write from that. You've got to sort of like dismiss all of the other stuff that doesn't work.
You guys have improvised together, though, also, right?
Yes.
I mean, so you've collaborated another.
Yeah, he directed my second one-person show.
Yeah.
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 Directed, so I feel like I managed it more than
directed it. Well, fine, he managed it.
Which is not a way of, like, absolving myself of responsibility more than just, like,
giving
you had
credit for...
she had so much already figured out for it that I just sort of was like...
That's the way I direct shows.
Yeah.
Shave I take this, a show that's good already, and then I, like, offer some edits, and then just put my name everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just for the sake of just you being able to have your name on it and have credit for it.
And then, awesome. And then you rail against the Obie Awards.
Work on a show, you will say, I can't direct this.
So. Oh, yeah, I'm busy. Yeah.
I'm really overwhelmed with the Hines Brothers.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I'm overwhelmed my other no preparation needed project. So how is it to collaborate on these things? I mean, is that something you had to learn how to do? Like, is there you have to like tiptoe around? I mean, do you fight? What's the fights like? Do you get
We didn't have any fights, and I think it's because I am such a good communicator.
That's exactly it.
I think it goes back to because we are such the yin and yang of personalities in terms of writing sketch that the fights we kind of defer to each other on all the right way in all the right ways on all the right things.
I have a nerdy question. Answer me honestly on this. So you guys met both doing improv at the UCB Theater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just performing around the city doing comedy. So you met each other as mutual performers. Then you got involved and now you're married. So like. How much does improv and comedy vocabulary enter in your discussion of like the rest of your life? Do you turn it off?
No.
Like, do you say like improv terms to each other when you're talking about non-improv things? It's like, oh, this vacation. This is the worst example that never happens.
I'm ready for it.
I'm ready for it too. Like, it's about vacation.
This vacation would be a good second beat of last year's vacation.
Oh no, we're not that bad. We're not that bad.
It doesn't get that far. What it gets to is, I'll tell you an example of there'll be a time when it's like I'm not a guy who likes to go out and do a lot of things in a given day.
No, he doesn't. He'll stay inside by his computer.
I wanna you know web surf. I wanna screw around on GarageBand. I wanna watch whatever I've got saved up on the DVR.
Boo.
And Jess will make plans, and it'll be like, oh, we're going to so and so's daughter's fourth birthday party, and then so and so's having a party. You know, 4 hours
engagement
after
party.
That.
Yeah,
engagement party. And I'll be like, geez, why we got to do all of this? And she'll be like, hey, how about a little bit more yes and.
Oh yeah, right.
So it's like that.
Improv couples go to that.
I want a little more yes and out of you.
Holding it over your head. Not only has it been pounded into you for years in classes, it's now being used as a weapon against your torpor.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. We went to this party, so about how about a little of this, then what else?
Yeah.
What else is another party?
Right. Yeah, we have to find the game of this engagement.
Yeah.
Didn't we edit this evening a little earlier? I missed the edit.
No, but the nerd part we will do is because we both coach and like teach and stuff. We'll come home and I'll be like, so-and-so tonight with blank, and they're like, I can't believe this, or this person did awesome, and like getting excited about which,
it's sort of like a husband and wife who both like coach sports teams.
Yes,
like, you won't believe the Blue Jays today.
Yeah, exactly.
The coach of the Blue Jays is married to the coach.
My fantasy world: all the major league coaches are homosexually involved with each other. Like Bobby Cox and Joe Torre are just like you.
Who is Terry Francona married to? Go.
Hulk Hogan.
He doesn't coach a baseball
team. Wait a minute. You just made an association.
Hulk Hogan also coaches the White Sox.
Hulk Hogan's real first name is Terry, so I see exactly how you get the math.
My Major League Baseball fantasy has very little to do with baseball.
And a lot to do with homosexual lovemaking.
I just want to see emotion in relationships.
Do you ever in your mind pair up like say Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds, like have a home run?
I mean that would be hilarious. I mean that'd be like The Wire. I mean like the drug running. And
So let's talk about your lush improv history.
It is lush.
Individually and together, James. You were on Mother.
As I like to say, I am a charter member of Mother.
That's right.
Because there are only two people who aren't, and we were together for so long. Oh, it's ridiculous.
And you all have jackets
to, yeah, it's, yes, it's they have ridiculous jack-
they
to
do
draw
have jackets.
That distinction.
Well, they have sweatshirts.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
Yeah. They actually do have sweatshirts.
Yeah, I remember that.
We made up sweatshirts for our big finale show a
was
year
an awesome
or so
show.
Ago. Yeah.
It was the night the Red Sox got killed.
I remember.
And it was we thought it's over. And I was remember going to the show. I was like, obviously, I'm going to go. It's their big night. Oh, no, this is the – I'm talking about the 8th anniversary
the
show
The 5th anniversary
had, whatever,
show
the 8th, whatever. We went, and it was the third game of the series of the Yankees. It had to be, right? And yeah. They were killed. It was the game they got killed. And all my friends were, like, texting me, like, just go Pats. Like, it was over. It's time to root for the Patriots.
Yeah.
And then that's when we made the big comeback. They thought it couldn't happen. We won all four games. We stuck it to those asshole Yankees.
That was the anniversary show. That's not
it,
the finale.
It was the anniversary show. But that's love. I saw the anniversary show.
Yeah, because you were a huge Red
Sox
fan.
I mean, and that was a big game. But you know what? It was good we didn't see it.
That was a good one not to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, karma took care of you.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you.
Mother is one of the most legendary weekend teams. You guys started as a Harold team and then moved to weekend team, had your own. Had a few different shows of your own that you did in the history of the theater.
Yeah,
right?
we started with the sleepover form, and we're always in search of what to do in the second half. And then just as we got the soundtrack developed, about half the group was getting bored with the sleepover form, so then we were constantly in search of what to do for the first half. So I was always like, why don't we just, now that we've had a hiatus from the sleepover, why don't we pair these up again? And everybody's like, no. But now when we do the marathon, like, that's what we do. We do the sleepover and we do the soundtrack, and I love it because I feel like it's ownership for our total show. Do you know what I mean? Like, we help develop Sleepover with Armando, and that sort of feels like our form and soundtrack.
I say this many times, but when Mother developed the sleepover, it was one of my coolest memories of the improv world here, because you guys were already like a top Harold team, very popular with everyone going to Harold Night, really hilarious. And you could have, and most teams, that's it. You ride that out and you run out of gas. But then, like, Mother buckled down, was one of the only good teams I saw transcend into like a super great team. They got with Armando, and this was after having been coached twice a week with Armando and Secunda.
Yeah.
Then you went in with Armando and developed a sleepover. They were workshopping it at the old Freaks Local for
Josh Cohen's Freaks Local.
But I was like, they're workshopping a show? So who workshops a show? People don't even workshop their own show. Like, you can't even get teams to show for their own Herald practice. But Mother's doing that and getting this other show together. And then it was an awesome show. I remember Ian raving about it in his classes. Like, everyone's got to go see Mother's sleepover show. And it was, like, mind-blowingly great. And when you did it at the finale, I couldn't wait. And tough form in that last finale show was a really great sleepover show.
Oh, it's a great sleepover show.
We were all
show.
Really psyched that it all sort of came together. And it was like, it was a very emotional day. And so I think we rehearsed in this very room and there was like a bit of an emotional moment. I was like, I don't know if we're going to get through this show.
It's hard. It's a hard form.
Yeah, yeah.
You can easily fall into plot. I mean, everyone picks a character early that's not defined and you want to see those characters again. And it can. And when the sleepover didn't work, it would sort of like, become tangled up in a lot of complications.
We learned a couple of things early on, and I credit Scott Armstrong for pointing out a couple of things right away. One is when we were only doing Harold's, he kept insisting that we not come out dancing to the intro music. And I was like, why? It's fun. We're all having fun, blah, blah, blah. And then we started videotaping our shows before we started working on the sleepover. Yeah. And you watch yourself on Harold stage coming out dancing, and you're like, oh, God, that looks,
Oh, you know what's weird? I didn't know this. Manzoukas was coaching my Harold team at this time, Monkey Dick. And he told us, he was like, you guys, do not come out. And I mean, not like we were doing that anyway, but like, and he did an imitation of Mother's. He's like, Jesse comes out doing like karate chops and like someone snapping their fingers. I remember
me.
That.
Probably me.
I didn't want to say it. Yeah.
But then the other.
James E.
Yes. Then the other thing Scott pointed out was in doing the sleepover, we would have some great shows and then some shows that would sort of like implode in a way. And he said, listen, whenever we talk about an event, whenever an event comes up in a scene, the next scene has to be at that event or after that event. We can't sort of like lie in wait to try to have a finale in that event. I remember early on there was a show where it was like some prom or dance in a barn or something, and we kept talking about it and waiting and talking until finally that last scene was like in the barn dance, and it did not pay off.
Right.
And he was like, you know, we can't do that. And I think that was a thing that he probably learned from Feature.
Right,
of
right.
Like when you have an event.
Yeah.
And I will say, going back to what you were saying about, and thank you for the kind words about the sleepover, but one of the things that inspired us, a couple of the things that inspired us was The Swarm sort of retooled and
Right.
Came back with their slow waltz around Rage Mountain. But before that, they had some really off Herald nights for a month or more. And it was deliberate. Like, I talked to Mulaney about it afterwards, and he said, yeah, we're working on very different things and pushing them in a different direction. I remember there was a month where it was like, what happened to the Swarm?
Yeah.
And then they came back, and it was suddenly like, kaboom.
Right.
The Swarm just, like, took off. And then another thing for me personally was Third Degree.
The improvised courtroom show that Steve Bosniak and
Curtis
Quinn,
Because I will say, one thing that happened when that show started...
My job here is the footnote.
Oh, my God. I just love with the joy. And the improvised courtroom.
Jesus.
Let's also point out...
a footnote about that show, for those of you who don't know... The wooden tables that
yes, I was going to say that
for
12 years.
For their, those were built specifically for
that,
the third
show.
Those
and now,
black weird wooden tables that are falling apart, and we put them together mostly out of posterity.
Well, Ryan Carls has replaced them piece by piece in place. Like they've
so they occupy the same original space. There was a comedian 100,000 years ago that I saw on HBO when I was a kid who was like, "I have George Washington's original axe that he chopped down the cherry tree. I had to replace the handle, and later I replaced the blade." But it occupies the same space, so it's the same.
Those tables are the third degree tables.
Yeah, but I remember Third Degree. It was like I was thinking, how dare these kids put up their own show?
Kids,
because you guys are like a generation, like a section behind us.
But it was just like just students, I think. And they got together with Billy and put together that show.
Yeah, it was like
ran for like over 2 years.
Yeah, forever.
Friday,
very popular. Yeah,
yeah, it was remarkable, and I thought. That to me was like when the Swarm did their show. It's like, yeah, they should do their own show. They've been around and blah blah blah. They're due, and then suddenly these upstarts come and do their show. And I was like, we gotta get on board, or we're gonna get left behind like the Pony Express.
Yes,
much like the Pony Express. Wowza!
That's the second horse reference.
Yeah.
But also, I don't want to leave out in my illustrious improv career. Let us not forget. Cartoon Chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you even bring that up? Why do you even bring that up?
Of course.
Because it needs to be on the record somewhere.
All right, well, put it on the record.
And then it's done.
All.
Never speak of this again.
Will is not into it.
He's not going to footnote Cartoon Chaos.
Neutrino has so many amazing stories. I don't want to get the weight here. But wasn't it like Feature was one half of the class and Cartoon Chaos was the other half?
Well, what happened was Feature was one half of the class. And then not all of us in Mother were the other half of the class. And... Besser worked on them on Feature, and then worked on us in Pattern Game almost exclusively for the entire 8 weeks. And then he wanted all of Mother to come back for his next level four, which most of us did, and then Cartoon Chaos came out of that.
I see. Okay.
So when I teach and I talk to a lot of students, they're always asking, like when they go to see weekend teams, one question that I get a lot or comment that I get a lot is like they seem to know each other so well and be so much on the same page and the same level, you know, and they have this great communication with each other. As someone who was in that kind of situation for so long, what's the key to that? With Mother, what was your experience with like just having that shared knowledge and being so close to each other?
I get that question a fair amount too, and I think it's a strange... I think it's a little bit the luck of the draw.
I agree.
That we got...
It is. It's lucky. It's fate when you get the right people together.
Yeah.
Balance.
It is. It's
a
balance.
Mother was just irritated with each other enough to remain interesting.
Yep.
But, like, had enough respect and affection that they could surmount any humps, you know?
I think that's a really good observation. I think that's exactly what it was. And then once the team distilled to its form with Jessica St. Clair and Tara as the final two pieces of the puzzle... I felt like that was it. Everybody's personality worked really well together. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the right analogy, but like that Venn diagram where we all sort of intersect in just enough of the right ways, but we're not all exactly alike so that we're all going to sort of like nerd out and alienate the audience or something.
Can you put it in terms of a horse?
I feel like some of us were the hooves. Some of us were the mane.
Some teams have too many hooves.
That's right. Too many hooves. Hooves.
So I think it's a little bit of the luck of the draw. And then just we all just liked hanging out together afterwards and doing stuff. So in different little collections of people we would end up socializing, and that just I think builds that bonding. The double-edged sword of it is you get too far in with a group where you know each other really well and you fall back into your safe roles.
Right. It's hard to break out of ruts.
And it's hard to be like, I think you guys talked about this on a being like new to an established team. It's like, oh, this scene needs to be edited, but I'm new. I don't know if I want to do that. The flip side of that is, I'm the guy who edits. I'm the guy who does that sort of walk-on button to the scene,
right, and then
I end up not initiating scenes, and you're the guy who does that, and you're the guy who does that. And then when a couple of people are absent, you start to realize, oh, I get to do this now. But then it's hard to bring that back in when the people who were gone for a couple of weeks come back and refill those roles in a way.
Right. Sure.
So that's the challenge, is to make sure that you're allowing everybody to be everything to all people at all times.
Right, to all horses.
Yeah,
Obama.
To all horses. Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, the great thing is, like, you can step out in a scene and you can be like, I have a third of an idea, but I know that Daly is going to do this with it. Or do something with it.
Yeah, you got to figure out how much of an idea you need to have for someone else's team to complete it. And that changes with every team.
And the other great thing is, like, I know that I can always pimp Jesse Falcon into doing breakdancing.
Yeah, that sort of thing happens.
Because he grew up breakdancing as a 12-year-old kid in London. It's like,
I feel the same way playing with Eric Tenoy, but it's
guy. Yeah, huge breakdancing.
Yeah, just whatever.
Yeah.
Lay a feather and he's going to be a dance pack.
Yeah. Okay, so Jess, you were on you were on Neutrino.
I was
One of the great Harold teams of the UCB Theater. Very innovative.
Very innovative. Yeah. Innovative is the word I will use. I will proudly wear. I actually was on a team first. I was on pole position.
That's right.
I remember that. That was when I was in level one. I saw all the pole positions.
Maddie Kunkus.
Maddie Kunkus was in it.
Yeah, Matt Hammer Kunkus.
That's right. And he was, I think, 15 or 16 at the time.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He asked me to a dance.
Oh,
how cute is
that? Is
I thought it was his prom.
It was. I don't think it was a prom. I don't think so. His mother was going to come pick me up at the train station, and I could stay over at their house, and then she'd drive me back.
And you got friended by him on Facebook.
I did, now, like, that he's a grown adult.
He's like hunky Maddie Kunkus now, right?
No, he's hunky Maddie Kunkus. But, and then Neutrino was already a team, and I believe Dinah dropped out. I think
Dinah
she hated everyone on the team.
Show. Yeah,
she hated everybody, right? I think that was it.
Yeah,
I love
Dinah,
but I mean, that, you know, Dinah knows her mind.
You don't have to back off that. Dinah, I was on a Herald team.
But I don't think Dinah would back off on it. I think
no
she
way.
Knows her mind, and she just didn't like it. So
all the Herald team she was on in order of hatred. And Neutrino
was
toward the top of that list.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
It was a dead heat for one.
It was an all-guy team.
Yeah. Kurt was, like, very aggressive player.
Yes, and he was new. Tommy wasn't on it yet. That would have made her probably leave halfway through the first show.
Yeah, right.
I can say that because I've improvised with Tommy for like 20 years. I can say that. But so she got taken off and Armando put me on the team. And I remember like pitching a fit. And you weren't allowed to pitch fits. I don't think you are allowed now. But like with Harold teams, you weren't allowed to say, I don't want to be on this team. It was kind of like you're just put on this team.
You're
and
still not allowed.
Yeah, you didn't, right. And so
let us know.
You can do it, but there
but
are consequences.
And no effect.
It's okay. Yes. Yeah. So I pitched a fit. Pole position pitched a fit. They all wrote to Armando. And I think because the theater was smaller, Armando was like, he would have let me go back, but right before he would have let me go back, Neutrino was like, we're going to have drinks at this bar. I forget the bar that's closed down.
Ciel Rouge.
And we all come and hang out with us. So I did. And I quickly was enamored of being the only woman. Suddenly I was at a table with seven more men. I was the only girl. I was like, am I crazy? I'm not going back to that team.
Yeah.
So when Armando was like, you can go back, I was like, don't ever tell them, which now I'm telling everyone. I was like, I'm not going back. Tell them you wouldn't let me go back. And he's like, all right.
Pole position was outside the window at Ciel Rouge. And,
yeah,
and Jess sort of just waved.
But so then it was... Yeah, I mean, the quick thing, Neutrino's a crazy story, I think, within the improv world,
well,
because...
Here, let me start you off.
Yeah.
I think Neutrino first established itself with cage matches.
Yes.
Definitely.
Timeouts. Like,
definitely.
They were a Herald team, and they were
not
okay,
a very good Herald team.
Well, they were okay. Like,
can I just
like,
interject in your footnote that when the cage match started here in New York, the first cage match was Swarm versus Cowbot. Right?
And Swarm won. Which
and I went, and I thought, like, Swarm will probably
win
but
like
these are two great teams. Yeah, second week was Swarm and
Neutrino.
And Neutrino was not having a good run of Heralds.
Right.
Nope.
And I didn't go because I thought, I don't want to see them get crushed.
Right, Swarm's going to just destroy Neutrino.
And then the next day on the pre-IRC boards, whatever that was, it was like, Neutrino won the cage match. And it was just like, what?
How did that happen?
Up is down.
Nobody
yeah, down is up. Crazy.
But then it was
through
continue. Gimmicky timeouts. Like,
oh, yes, completely.
And stacking the house. Kurt
stacked the house.
As one person said, Neutrino's dirtbag friends stacked the house.
Yes, he did.
Kurt
Brennauer has more friends than anyone I know.
He is he is a social connector between all human beings. He is. City.
Yeah.
He would organize the craziest, most creative events.
Yeah.
Like,
well, he did. Changwin. What was it?
Changwin. Chunk and Changwin.
Yeah, Chunk and Changwin, which was
that
like
a whole 45-minute backstory. Right
oh
there.
Yeah, yeah, which yeah. we won't even
Penguin,
get into.
Half chicken.
Yes.
Right?
We'll have to get Kurt in here. Some yeah.
Chixon.
Chixon, half chicken, half Nixon.
Yeah, that was Brett Gelman.
Oh, whatever. I mean, like the backstory of Kurt's. I mean, before there was Improv Everywhere, which is sort of like these huge.
Oh yeah, amazing events.
Events. Mm-hmm. There was Kurt Bronner and whatever the hell Kurt Bronner was working on this week.
That's right. Yeah.
So
right.
when he was on a Herald team, he just like called. He picked up his bat phone, and just like the UCB theater was jammed with.
It was jammed. It was packed.
For a team that had only been around a couple of months.
Yeah.
And they did gimmicky timeouts.
Yeah.
Yes.
The first one of which was giving out beer.
We
in
gave
the
out beer, I think. Or
no,
took
you
our
stripped
clothes
to your
off.
Underwear
we
first.
Took our clothes off to
that
our
was the
underwear.
First one?
Yes.
Because I saw the second cage match you
was
were in was when you gave out beer.
The third one was I made out with Jane Napier.
Yeah, that's right. And this at this point, I'm
not just made out with. You pulled up a lollipop.
Yes.
And shared the lollipop.
And then made out.
And then we made out. Yeah, we
and
played
I will
Madonna.
Say, it was at this point that I became aware of Jessica Allen.
Yeah, right. Not just you, my friend.
But I will say, what I find hilarious is, and we've talked about this, is that she has no memory of me as a performer at the UCB. I mean, like, let's just, to blow my own horn publicly, I do it often enough privately, but, like, I'm on Mother. We're generating
the,
a lot of heat for the Herald night.
Yes.
We're working towards, we get a weekend show, and she's like, I still didn't know you then.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, are you crazy? Yeah. I was on a premier high-profile team. Yeah.
That's right. Well, too bad.
Yeah, right?
Too
yeah.
bad.
Such
so
is the way of the world.
What were some of the other timeouts that you guys...
Oh, goodness.
Have,
making out. I don't remember after that.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
The thing that I always remember was my first Harold Team Petrol was against Neutrino
yes.
in cage match, which turned out to be the one-man Kurt Bronner.
Bronholer.
Cage
yes,
match.
Yes.
That was the second...
What happened with these first timeouts were... There was like an uproar.
There's
the
an uproar.
Community.
We were
using gimmicks and stacking the
house. On the lollipop timeout, yes. they were up against Pound or were they Merkin still?
It was Pound.
They were up against Pound.
And
they
another
did
another huge team. Like
yes.
Yeah.
Seth and Morris and Brian
Cordry.
Bowie.
And they did a timeout that was exactly 1 minute of the Iceman cometh.
Yes.
And they thought that it was like really hip
this
and really cool.
We're gonna do a minute of O'Neill.
I was sitting in the back of the old theater
yes.
and Bowie was standing right next to me and they did the makeout and Bowie literally screams, "What the fuck? We can't compete with that.
Yes.
We're fucked."
He is definitely correct.
And I looked at him and I was like, "You're dead in the water, my friend."
There was all this like controversy about like Neutrino.
Yes.
I remember at one point,
yes.
Besser and Conroy were on stage in chairs hosting Cage Match, and they had a discussion about whether it was right to use timeouts or not. And Conroy's like, "Whatever, you know, the vote is the vote. Whatever gets the vote." And Besser's like, "Yes." Who can forget the great timeouts of the Chicago Bulls teams of the mid-90s?
Yes, I remember that. But now, wasn't that...
I missed
so
that.
So here's the thing.
Yes.
That they had this incredible run, and then the team that beat them on that first run was...
You.
Mother. Yeah.
By like 3 votes.
Right.
Then we had a bit of a run, and when we went up against
Respecto
mm-hmm.
we hired
Neutrino to do our timeout, because we had done 2 other timeouts. One was... we put a phone on stage and pretended that we were going to prank call Besser. And it was actually Delaney back
in
the booth.
This.
And then the phone rings in the middle of our group game. And we pick it up and it's quote-unquote Besser. It's Delaney.
Right.
And then like everybody was like, oh, shit, they're in trouble. And Mulaney thought that that really was Besser and thought that we were done as a Herald team.
That would be... So if you're
going to
get broken up.
Yeah, that's like the best
that's the way,
way
to
ever.
Do it. Yeah.
That would be spectacular.
And then
yeah.
the second one we did, the second timeout we did, we got Mandzukas had 2 friends, Rodney, whose last name I don't know, was a head writer for Letterman, and this other girl, he proposed to her on stage for a timeout mm-hmm. and she said no, and then they sat back down and the whole audience was like, "Ooh, this is awkward." The rest of our
Herald. Yeah. Oh,
wow. So the third timeout was we hired Neutrino
yes.
to do our timeout
yes.
when we
Which
went up against
awesome.
Respecto. And then
and we stacked the house
they stacked
and we
the
won
house
the show.
And wrote
on
in
our right in
boat. Neutrino.
Yeah.
And so that led to a 3-way.
It was awesome. Everybody hated us.
Got amended after that.
Yeah.
Only vote for the teams on the ballot.
Yeah.
People can't take it.
And then there was a last
awesome.
Minute.
Even I think that's awesome now.
There was a last minute 3-way cage match with
oh,
us,
yeah.
Neutrino, and Respecto. And Tara Copeland had been out to dinner with friends and was literally drunk, showed up to the show drunk, just like, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah.
And I think that's when they hosted, and that's when that line, because I do remember that line, the great timeouts of the Chicago Bulls. But I think they hosted
this,
that three-way.
This actually made Neutrino a better team, though. I remember they were like kind of like just an unremarkable
Absolutely.
Yes.
And there was so much buzz about the timeouts that they kind of like gelled. They were like, they brought you guys. It just seemed to like inspire you guys.
It did. And I think, well, the big thing is it gave us a show every week, which as anyone here knows, improvising. You need a lot. You need more swings.
You need more rides in the saddle before you can get a good
time. Nice. Nice.
For all the students listening.
I know.
And for all the students listening, this is an example of playing the game of the scene.
Is it just a pattern, though? I don't know if we're turning it into a game.
So tell us what that was like for you at that time. Just like, how did that feel like being a part of that?
It was great. And also, I think it's made my experience, like, I feel like our experience at the theater is much different because I think you were friends with everybody, and I think once Neutrino had that cage match and, like, we beat the swarm and we weren't supposed to do that, and we did it more like it's going to be fun. Like, I always think of us as a bunch of, like, maverick kids that are like, this is going to be fun, and then people get pissed off. They get mad, and so we ended
Neutrino's
up...
Neutrino's vibe is sort of like, this is all fun, right? We all know that this is nonsense, and it's improv, and it's not making anybody rich or famous right now, right? We all know this is a good
like,
time.
Get back in the friggin' Mary
exactly.
Prankster, man. You
exactly.
hippies were trying to do something.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's it kind of made us bond, but it made everyone else hate us. So it was sort of like, we bonded...
How was the word?
Vitriol
was crazy.
It was crazy.
Just
yeah.
cage match. There's only 50 people in the audience.
Yeah, there's only 50 people hated us. So it made us stronger as a team because we had no other friends. I had no other friends in the theater. I mean, it was like then it became us. And so I think my until I went back into class after that, then I made other new friends at class. But it really, as far as being a team among teams, like I see that now, I'm like, oh, everyone's, that was not my experience. We were very much our own island. In fact, we had a part where we did shows called Neutrino Island. but it was, I mean, it was a fun team.
I have a couple other questions.
And we still do shows.
Oh, yes, that's right. Sometimes the teams will not be at the theater, not be at Herald Night, and it doesn't mean the team is gone. It just means their run at UCB is over.
Yeah.
This podcast is very UCB-centric, of course.
Right.
No, but I'm just saying as it should be. But I'm just saying, like, even after all that, I think the bond of it is, like, we are all still very close.
You've been on an improv team with someone for a while. It's a special bond for you.
It is, and I feel like I was on that team forever, and so those people are, like,
which
always,
was the Behind the Improv series?
Behind the Improv was awesome.
Before or after the One Man Herald? Because I feel like you went to this long cage match run, and then you lost. And I know when you came back with Behind the Improv, you lost the first one.
No,
we didn't.
No, Behind the Improv had like a 3 or 4 week run, and then finally, because I remember we lost to Behind the Improv, and I was just like, damn it.
Oh no. Didn't Neutrino Nation? There was like a Neutrino Nation.
Neutrino
yes,
Nation
that lost
after the first
that
one,
lost.
And that was
what,
after
you're
Behind the Improv.
To is the fake
boy
documentary
band.
Series.
Yes,
there's
yes.
a everybody knows Behind the Music on VH1. And Neutrino at some point started doing Behind the Improv.
Yes,
where I think you'd profile a member of the group each week and show some like fake drug problem or something that they would have.
It was
right?
pretty awesome.
Every time Neutrino came back to cage match, it was like, what are they gonna do?
Yeah,
and it's basically like quick gimmicks that work great. Then it was Behind the Improv, pretty intense parody. And no one was doing videos back then. If you brought in a video, it was like you brought in a magic wand.
It was
an ordeal.
It was a huge ordeal to do video.
We had to bring Ptolemy's TV from his house to the
theater
and hook it up because
there
was nothing to show video on.
We
rolled our own TV on.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot that.
Videos, and then that went for a while. Then you came back, and they constructed a whole fake band called Neutrino.
Yes,
Nation.
That did not go over well. But we
work.
Have a whole album.
That they had,
we have a whole album.
An album for their
management.
We have an album. We have it. We play it when we all hang out. That's how
really?
Gay we are. We do. When we hang out, we did a Neutrino show, a month ago in L.A.? And at the, what the hell? It was the other theater.
IOS.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be asked back there because I remember that.
We're
but
like an hour and a half into this podcast, no one's listening except for me and James.
Exactly. But we were singing our Neutrino songs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just so many awesome events. I'm just gonna list them, and we'll get to the video project.
Yeah, I was gonna say yeah.
Like, that was like
that's
tavern.
The big one. Yeah,
that was
already a huge thing.
And that again debuted against us
at Cage Match.
Yeah. We
at
were
cage
like
match.
We were like the Colts and Patriots of
you
the
guys
day.
Got together, Colts horse.
That's why
I have added a sub game.
So, well, I'm gonna. So they did the One Man Herald. I want to say, like, Kurt wanted to do One Man Herald.
Yep.
He actually just talked about this on Mulaney's podcast. But Kurt, so one podcast or one. Good heavens. One Case Master, came out.
Yes.
And they all sat down, and just Kurt did a One Man Herald. This was against you.
Yeah, Petrol. This is against Petrol. Yes. Meanwhile, we're in the basement.
Yeah, describe this. This is such a great image.
This is back when you used to
warm up in the basement.
When people used to drum their feet on the risers as a form of applause in the audience.
Yes.
When they liked to show a lot, they would drum their feet on the risers. We're downstairs in the basement of 161 trying to warm up, hearing this thunderous applause and feet banging. And at one point, so the legend goes, at one point, Brandon Calhoun looked up towards the stage and a piece of plaster fell on his face from people drumming their feet. So it was like, I just remember leaving the theater, or leaving the basement, walking up the stairs, just feeling already just humiliated and miserable. Like,
did at any point somebody say, dead man walking?
I'm sure we all said it. I get, to this day, get super fucking competitive about cage match to the point that I don't even enjoy doing it because I just want to fucking win. And I was like so angry. And then I was even angrier after cage match because not only were we dead from the beginning, but we also like let it get the best of us and did a shitty show.
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing could have competed with that.
You could have brought back John Lennon. You would not have won the show. But, well, then this is totally weird. Because I think the next
you should have said brought Patti Smith on because of
the horses.
Album.
Oh.
I just ruined the fun. I just ruined the fun.
Not that it was good. Everything needs a lull. Speaking of a lull, this is a horrible thing, but the next week was going to be I think Neutrino was planning on doing a two-person Herald the next week, but then 9/11 happened.
Yeah, you guys bonded.
The next week, and the next
right.
Tuesday, Herald Night was on a Tuesday.
That's
was,
right.
Was, Herald Night was on a Thursday then.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday was like
9/11.
So
yeah, which was supposed to be the second sleepover show.
Oh, wow.
I was to flyer for the show, and it was like, oh, we're not doing it.
No one's doing anything.
No one's doing anything. No.
Yeah.
So then, like, there was a week off, the theater was closed, and 2 weeks after 9/11, the next cage match was my team, Monkey Dick versus Neutrino.
Yep.
But everyone was still so just weirded out and bummed
that horrible
whole scene.
That horrible smell of burning concrete was still in the air.
It was still in the air. It was still
literally
in the air. So everyone's like, well, what is cage match? It felt weird to be competitive. And
yes.
I think it might have been Ptolemy's idea, but that instead of doing this competitive thing, because like John says, like you get in your head, even though you know it doesn't mean anything, and people got so mad over cage match timeouts.
Yeah, yeah.
No one felt like getting into that headspace.
No.
So we put all our names in a hat.
Yep.
This was Neutrino's idea. And mixed up the two teams, so that Dick Trino went against Manuki.
Manuki, mm-hmm.
You and I were on Manuki's
desk,
and we lost.
We did lose.
And then Dick Trino won for the next, like, 6 weeks. Or like, 4 or 5 weeks in the cage match.
It was really fun, though, to mix everybody up and
just
like, play.
Oh, who, doesn't matter who wins.
Yeah.
We just need to be nice to each other.
Yeah.
And then I think because of karma and Wilt Fong pimping John Gemberling into the first scene of every cage match. Smart move, Wilt Fong. that's
he's
not
canny.
Totally true. And then Dick Trino won for like 4 or 5 weeks.
It
was always something different when Neutrino. And then you guys came into the video project.
Yes.
Where you improvised a video live on stage.
That was
as a cage match.
Yes.
This is one of the things that I generally remember as being like a huge, innovative, and revolutionary moment, like a real special event kind of thing. You guys would get a suggestion, and then you would go out into the streets of Manhattan in pairs, right? Each of you with
a camera
video person.
Yep.
A camera person. You would shoot a scene, and then people would be running back to the theater with the tapes, right, to show.
To play them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sitting in the audience after having done our cage match and thinking, we did a good job, and then seeing this unfold, it was as though a time traveler had come back from the future to medieval times and shown us a ballpoint pen, and we were all just like,
insane.
How is this? I literally was like, how are they doing this? Because Mandzukas and Falcon did walk-ons in the background.
Yeah.
I was like, that's them now because they're wearing those clothes. This isn't pre-tape. They haven't worked this out. And I remember just literally being like, do they have a microwave van out front that they're like feeding this
in?
No,
that would
have
been
like,
awesome if
whole system
did.
Of people running tapes.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So tell us about how it came about and what the experience was like for you.
It's,
those are two separate questions.
Yes. It came about, all I can think is, honestly, all I can remember is Ptolemy and Kurt having A lot of charts and diagrams, honestly. And I'm sure they'll fight it over. I'm sure Tommy say it was him and Kurt would say it was him. That's another thing that Chino had for going for it. I think Matt Donnelly said, this is when Matt Donnelly was on the team finally. Like, we went through a bunch of different, but I think our team that really stuck and became Neutrino, even though I've loved everyone who's been
Matt
on the team.
And Rebecca
was added. Rebecca were added. And so it was Matt, Rebecca, Rachel, Bob, Steve,
Kurt,
Tommy, myself. And they kind of had this idea to do this. And I really want to say this to other teams because it's like, they're like, oh, well, they came up with the idea. Well, it's a crazy idea. And when you just see it on paper, I mean, it literally was a bunch of charts and like boxes and things go here. Everyone on that team had to say, okay, we're going to do it. Yeah. And that's a huge thing. I think that's like, that's what makes teams gel is that because there's
no one's been able to do this like Neutrino. No one, including Mother, or maybe not nobody, but very, very few teams can do anything that requires like the work and organization necessary to do this. It was like amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Everybody was involved.
Everybody's involved. Yeah. It's a lot of work. You have to get more people. It's not, I mean, the show takes about 14 people. It's not 8 people. So then you're asking people, you need at least 4 runners to run the tapes. You need someone in the booth because the music's all improvised as well. The music's laid on, but they just have like a playlist. So when they see them, they lay on the music. We made a spinning end. So if we got stuck in the middle, that would show. I mean, there's a ton of moving parts to this thing.
Neutrino's ideas are always so far out of the box that I think you're not wrong when you say like nobody else does stuff like that. People think of things that are well within the defined sort of territory of improv and improv shows that get up to the edge maybe and sort of maybe step just over the fence, but they're literally like, we've built a rocket that's going to go beyond. <Yeah. laughs> You know what I mean? Like, this thing is that. And even Neutrino Nation and even
behind the
improv was sort of that thing so far out of the box. You were just like, there was a part of you that was, for me anyway, I can't certainly speak for the entire improv community as much as I'd like to, that was like, Jesus Christ, I fucking hate these guys. They're so interesting and creative. Like, God damn it, how dare you be this bold?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you want to just like have that like a Harrison Bergeron thing where you just put all the fucking weights and sandbags on their ankles so that they're even with you.
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
but it was
a pretty great reference I made, right?
That was great.
I don't know what that is.
Well, what it's more like is if you would put weights around a horse.
Horse, we knew. We all saw that coming.
Ding.
Dang.
Saddlebags. the ding is becoming so disdainful. It's wearied and disdainful.
It feels more of an obligation.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right.
But it was amazing. It was, and it was fun to be a part of. And it was definitely, there were people on the team. We had a middle section of people before we became the team I just mentioned. And there were some people when we started thinking about doing it. And there were people that were like, I don't want to do that. And it was really funny because the rest of the team was like, oh no, we're doing this. And then it's like almost like fate. They were then left the team. And then these other people came on that were like, oh yeah, we're doing this. And because it takes everybody. It's such a massive thing to take on.
Yeah.
But it was great to do.
And I will say the other thing, because I then worked with these guys.
He was our honorary member.
I was the honorary sort of like the Billy Preston or the, what's her name for Monty Python? Carol.
No idea.
Carol Channing.
Carol Channing, yes. Carol Channing. Carol Cleveland.
Hello.
And she did
Hello
Dolly.
She did Hello Dolly.
But in being in Mother and... Being in Mother and then sort of having a sort of an inside, you know, glimpse on Neutrino, these guys also had something that I envy, and I don't know that any other improv group has this, and that is...
No one will because it's also crazy.
They can fight with each other like nobody else, then they make up and they're over it. If Mother had any fights, a tenth of what they had, we would have all stopped speaking to each other right away. For us, it was a lot of like... Shit had to remain unspoken.
Right.
Yeah. And so you just let the irritation that you're talking about just like, it just ebbs, you know, you just slough it off after a while. But these guys would like, they would pick at that raw nerve and then like, okay, do you see like this and this? And they'd be back and forth and they'd be like, all right, now we're good, right? Yeah. And they were. It was really amazing how they could go through that thing.
Yeah.
It was crazy. There were like 4-hour rehearsals that were just talks.
Yeah, I was
really?
In. I was.
Yeah,
they
were just
one
like he was at one of them. He kind of was like, "What's going on?" But it's also now we die laughing at them because. But I think you just have a lot of personalities. For whatever reason, on that team, you had a lot of Type A personalities on that team.
Yeah. I mean,
Ptolemy,
and
Kurt
alone.
Me, Bob, Matt, and even Matt at that point really laid back. He wasn't the Matt that he think he is in a lot of other things, and now where he's much more like he is now. But I mean, you just have people that are like.
Been before he was certainly one. He was the wasn't he like the founder of PSU?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
He was the guy that put it all together.
And I think being on this team, it's like you walk in and it's like you got a lot of people. You don't have a lot of people willing to
compromise. But also in your favor, those Type A's are all like different flavors of Type A.
True.
If they've all been exactly the same Type A,
if
it had been like all four like Ptolemy Type A's or Kurt Type A's, it would have been a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah.
But like they all were able to like, I don't know, it's really, really funny how they all sort of like rub together.
To step back to the video project just for a second. So like, just talk me through how it would begin. So you'd come out, you'd get a suggestion, right? Now let's say you and Rebecca Johnson go out to do a scene. So you two leave and you go to a specific location.
Yes.
Or you just find a location that looks interesting.
No. Before we would start, we'd scout locations because we wanted to shoot in delis, we wanted to shoot in restaurants, and you have to ask. I mean, you know, it's also evolved. So now I'm trying to think back what we used to do. Because now when we do the video projects, it's we've learned to buy ourselves a lot of time at the top so that the tapes have no delay. Because I think what happens is, too, I'll just explain. So you give three groups of two people. And you have three camera people. And the guy that shoots it or the woman that shoots it is also the director, basically. Because, again, because it's on video, it suddenly becomes the director's medium. It's not – that's the other big difference. It's not the improviser's medium anymore. It's I'm shooting what I shoot, you see in the audience. Makes a big difference, not on stage, right?
Huh.
The other big thing you learn from doing video improv is that for us, the big thing was, you know, on stage, I can be a crazy cowboy. Or I'm not. Here's my head. Or you're real people on film, so I can't have a hat. I can't be not me. I can't be a man. I can't be a young boy, right? I have to play me in these clothes in this moment. And because we have a video camera that only has a mic on it, we don't have lobs or anything, right? You have to be really close to your scene partner.
Huh.
So now you have a lot of structure on you, a lot of boundaries. So it was a big learning curve. To figure out how to do that, how to improvise, how to trust being funny when you have no reaction, no one's laughing at you. So there's no laughs to follow, right? Which we do on stage. We follow the laugh a lot. None of that. And you have to basically play yourself a lot of the time. Those are like big sort of like
those
at first.
Those three restrictions I've never even thought of.
Very hard.
I didn't realize that was happening behind me.
Yeah.
Is there any online anywhere? Like, there really aren't, right? It would be too bad to not.
Yeah,
We should
be able to see
them.
Yeah.
We should put them online.
If Ptolemy's listening, I would think he would have the tapes and would be converting
them.
We
have
now.
A bunch of tapes.
Because he has time to do that, right? He has a wife and child.
He
should have.
No, just his child.
Baby, wife, child, yeah.
But
the other small thing that you learned was that if there's ever a scene where there's any sort of makeouts, You have to really make out.
That, so now when I coach people and I see love scenes and like, I don't know, I'm sure when you see this, people will like touch, they'll be like, I love you, this touch. And I'm like, that's just hilarious because you can't see, I'm on the radio, but but it's very funny to me because the big lesson was Rebecca did a scene, John Daly sat in one show.
Calling out John Daly.
And they were making out, and I put that in quotes. And they wouldn't make out with each other because they didn't. It was like improv, right? You don't have to really make out. So they kind of necked each other. Like, not even, I mean, like literally put their necks next to each other and pretended to make out.
Yeah.
Well, you're on camera. So the whole audience was like, what? I mean, the audience immediately does not forgive you or laugh. They're like, ew, this is, you're faking it. So it became this thing of like, that's the other thing that I think it bonds you, Trino, is I've made out with everybody. I mean, you just have to.
You
and
were
I,
like the Mary Pranksters, like some late 60s hippie group.
It is like late 60s hippie group. You have to make out with everybody. We went to the Aspen comedy festival, and we did it. And Matt and I were playing newlyweds. And at one point, I was in the shower taking a shower, and like you couldn't see anything, but the camera was coming in, right? So I had to get naked in the shower. But we were also in that time thing, which I will go back to explain the form better in one second.
It was in that show, and I had to be stark naked right in front of Steve Buck.
Yeah, him and Steve were naked with each other, like in a. I mean, yeah. Just stuff where you have to, because otherwise people know you can't fake it.
Right.
And we had to get right to the next bed scene. And I remember being naked, and I jumped in the bed, and I was like, Matt, come on, get on top of me. Come on, go, we gotta go. We could get on top of me. And he was just, I love Matt. Matt goes, okay, Jessica, time out. He's like, you are really naked. He's like, I'm in a towel. I don't know. I'm like, just get on. We gotta go. He's like, at least let's put a sheet between us. I mean, it was really funny because you just don't even think.
Here's what we need the video podcast, because really, John's face was
my reaction, John.
It was a cartoonish level, like in terms of the extreme, like mouth agape, wide-eyed.
It's like full fucking commitment. It's like yes. The improviser's dream level of commitment.
It is. You have the full commitment. It's like, you are my husband. Get on top. We're naked. We don't have time to talk about this because we have 3 minutes to shoot a 2 minute scene. Otherwise, this tape is going to be late. So yeah, it's like
there's
2 minutes.
None of that, like two people standing and talking to each other, kind of half or a quarter committing to each other.
No,
it's knowing that their cleverness will win the audience over. It's like full fucking real commitment.
Butt naked make out.
Yeah, with
butt
all
naked
the restrictions.
Commitment is what I'm going to start. I'm going to coin that term.
So the form is everyone gets a suggestion. You run to the streets. Everyone has their first location picked out. That's all you really know, and who your camera person is. The first scene is 2 minutes long in camera, but you have 3 minutes to shoot it, which means you don't have a lot of time to screw around. That's 3 minutes to shoot it and get it back to the theater. So that's 2 minutes. So you have 2 minute scene, 2 minute, 2 minute scene, like a Herald. Boom, boom, boom. And then you go back and shoot the next, like, second beats of these scenes. And you get a little more time. I think they're like 3 minute scenes. You shoot in 5 minutes
because the audience is watching the first.
And they're watching the first one while you're shooting the second one. Uh-huh. You also don't know what your other teams are doing. Right, you only know what you and your partner are doing, and then those get run in, and then you go and you do. I think there have been so many different forms now.
First time you did it, you guys actually stuck to the Herald form and did a group game as part of the presentation.
Oh, I don't remember
you got
that.
You were all standing in a circle and talked about the suggestion. You sort of broke the fourth wall of what the reality was of the three scenes and did some sort of filmed group game and then went back into the scenes. That quickly went away, though.
Yeah, because
it didn't serve.
It didn't serve. It didn't going meta on film. Who cares? Nobody wants. They watch. They want to believe. Right? The audience wants to believe this is happening, so you can't really break it. So you do three scenes in that time, and then the last scene is everyone goes to one location, and we try to find a way, like in a Herald, to make them all sort of come together. Which with film, you can just have the camera pass one couple, and they're just all in the same. Maybe it's all in the same deli, and then the camera pans over, and this couple's doing something, and then the camera pans over, and then as the form was, we were finding it. We would start filming deli people. I mean, we'd get people off the streets to be in it, because that also adds like fun stuff too. And some of that works, and some of it doesn't.
You also shot something in Wilt Fong's car once.
Yes.
Was that?
Yeah, he brought his car.
And you had the camera guy in there and, like, drove around and did
all
that.
I know, we're, like, talking way too long. But anyways.
Yeah, it's great. No, I mean, this is all, like, I feel like this is, like, essential. This is, like, an essential conversation. I feel like we're doing
the
history of the improv community a service here by having this.
I want to chime in because I don't know that this has ever been talked about, and it's a story I always tell. And that is Monkey Dick. I don't know if you're on Monkey Dick at this point. It might have been their first show, early show.
I was on every incarnation of the team, but you go ahead.
Were you on Fire Hot Burn?
I was on Fire Burn, but
before Monkey Dick.
We were a practice group that made a Herald team, so I got moved
from
Fire Hot Burn to Monkey
Dick. Okay, that's why I'm confused. Okay, yeah. So it might have been.
What team were you on?
I was on Beautiful Cop for a while.
Daly, he was hilarious.
Yes, and Mandzukas was great. I was on Beautiful Cop, and then I was on Deep Space 8.
Sure.
And replaced Toner.
But yeah. Gemberling, it might have been their first show. Gemberling initiated a group game, and this should go down. The one I remember is, all right, everybody, get in here for this business meeting.
Oh, no.
Some crazy shit's going to happen.
No, he was on We're Ninjas before he was on
Ninja. Oh, is that what
his
it was?
His team was called We're Ninjas.
That's
he came
right.
And he said, everybody get in here. We're going to have the craziest business meeting ever.
That's it. That's it.
And I think he pointed right at Jake Fleisch and was like, now you say something hilarious. I think so. Something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that was one of those moments where you're like, who is that guy?
Yeah. He was 19 at that time, probably.
Yeah.
Or 20 or
something. Yeah, he was a youngin'.
Yeah.
Well, we're going going to wrap this up now because we've been going on quite a while. Yes. Even though we could talk about both, I could talk about Mother and Neutrino. I'm sure all four of us could for hours.
They've done a lot.
I know. You have to come back. I think both of you are.
I was kidding. It was going to be 3 hours of me and James talking about 1999.
I know.
Yeah, I think both of you are going to have to come back at some point, either together or individually.
Get the URL, CompleteUCBHistory.com/podcasts.
James Eason and Jessica Eason Allen, thank you for coming in. Your show is
Thursday. Yes, this Thursday, the 29th at 8. We are the second slot, so we're at 8:30. But the whole show is going to be awesome. We're up with Amy Height, Dominate Yourself.
Yeah, also a great show.
Great show. Yeah, and it's a fun show. And Rachel Hamilton directed it, of great Chicago fame. She's was on a team once with one of my favorite people of all time. I'm going to mess his name up. Pat McCartney, who I think is a lost genius.
Pat McCartney's great. Yeah. Lost genius. Where is that guy? I've heard
I know so many sightings.
We need to do a podcast just of Rachel Hamilton talking about being in the Second City Tour Company with Tina Fey, Ali Faranaki, and Pat McCartney,
Amy Poehler,
just to name a few.
That was it. But she said, "Can you imagine?"
And Abby Scheer
being on a van with Ali and Pat.
Yeah.
So someone of that ilk has directed the show, and she's fantastic. And it's really fun, and I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
And
you will leave this show, I think, with at least a couple of catchphrases.
Yes, we've had some catchphrases, people. We have catchphrases,
that's
damn
great.
It.
That's what you need.
That's what we
hooks
need.
And catchphrases.
Hooks and catchphrases.
Giddy up.
Giddy up.
Ding.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, Jess and James. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And that's going to do it for the UCB podcast. We will see you next week.
Bye.